And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
Lots and lots of talk these days about just about everything across the kitchen table, across the nation, around the world. And we aren't the only ones talking. Animals talk just as much as we do. It's time we listen, and we're learning plenty. And when talk goes poetic with a dash of music, it can inspire great nations. We're talking about talking in all its forms today when we return to the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
From the great planet Earth, it's a beautiful day in the universe, in our little moment in the infinity of time. Welcome to the Wild Side News. Thanks for being here. Today, we'll be doing a lot of talking about talking. We start out with the news, then follow with an investigation into the amazing communications of koalas, being studied by behavioral scientists at the San Diego Zoo. Then we move up the coast to San Francisco, where the Sustainable World Symposium is being held to share experiences and visions of a sustainable world, something that seems to keep coming up in stories from around the globe. And then we cross the nation to the opposite coast as we explore a most amazing park of the week, Fort McHenry, which has a lot more than merely being the birthplace of America's Stars and Stripes. It's an official historic shrine, a most amazing reminder of war and the American legacy. So let's get started with stories making news from around the world. As if oceans weren't in enough trouble, a new form of fishing called bottom trawling is raking up more muck than it's worth, according to various environmental groups. 11 nations condone bottom trawling, in which fishing boats drag massive nets along the ocean bottom in extremely deep water near the underwater mountains known as seamounts, destroying the corals, sponges, and leaving a disastrous mess in their wake. However, the process nets enough salvageable fish to make it economically viable. Unfortunately, the process wreaks wanton destruction on entire ecosystems with no accountability or research to even assess the long-term effects. Conservation International, the World Wildlife Federation, numerous other notable groups are urging a ban on bottom trawling until seamounts can be surveyed and protections put in place. A team of British scientists proposes establishing a global network of marine parks to protect threatened ocean systems. A network with 30% coverage of the oceans would cost a mere $12 to $14 billion to run each year. But relatively soon the cost would seem reasonable compared to the costs associated with dramatic decreases in fishing throughout the earth. The network of fish sanctuaries would relatively quickly result in increased fishing stocks. The 2002 World Summit on Sustainable Development urged creation of national networks of marine parks by 2012 to protect dwindling fish stocks. In a related story, the Great Barrier Reef is the largest living organism on the planet, a colossal colony of limestone secreting coral polyps stretching 1,430 miles off Australia's east coast. The national park shelters 128,960 square miles of ocean, an area the size of Japan. While worldwide 12% of land is protected, less than 1% of ocean is protected. At the time the Great Barrier Reef was established in 1970, there was a widespread belief that the ocean was essentially infinite in its capacity to yield fish and other wildlife, and that it could assimilate infinite quantities of waste from the land. That's the opinion of Sylvia Earle, an explorer in residence with the National Geographic Society. Obviously, those fantasies have run headlong into their consequences, and we now face collapsing fisheries, dying coral reefs, and polluted coastal waters. it is perhaps instructive to note that warnings continue about deforestation, global warming, habitat destruction, air quality, drinking water. If it takes 30 years for these warnings to play out before they are acknowledged, one wonders, what will be left? In America, the Supreme Court unanimously defeated the work of numerous wilderness conservation, recreation, and outdoor industries to protect public lands from unfettered off-road vehicle use, particularly in areas deemed potentially suitable for wilderness protection. Their ruling makes it impossible for such organizations to find legal means to force the Interior Department to protect millions of acres of extremely fragile ecosystems from becoming an unregulated motorized playground. Lands associated with Zion and Canyonlands National Parks, which had protection under existing regulations, will now be subject to uncontrolled off-road use as there is no legal authority to force their protection. Off-road vehicle use has increased dramatically in 20 years, growing from 9,000 to 83,000 vehicles in Utah alone. The loss of this case in the Supreme Court, which pitted national and local citizen organizations against off-road users, may unfortunately increase the sense of urgency to head to the open spaces now. Such could result in radical transformation of these extremely fragile ecosystems. Britain is considering whether to approve the country's first ever cloning of human embryos for research into stealth sim applications. Human cloning has been successfully demonstrated in Korea. China now leads the world in having the largest number of forest parks, and the country's forest tourism industry is developing rapidly. 300 million visitors headed into the Chinese forests as part of the emerging nature reserves, hunting grounds, scenic areas, and tourist regions. So far, China has established 1,658 forest parks covering 19 million hectares, together with 1,757 nature preserves, adding an additional 150 million hectares. One-third of all Chinese tourists go to the forest to recreate. The local economies are benefiting from a whole series of related industries such as transportation, catering, animal husbandry, planting, and retailing. Meanwhile, a New Zealand mother and child were rudely disturbed during breakfast when a meteorite crashed through their roof, bounced back up to the ceiling, then came to rest under a computer desk. It was their morning wake-up call. And that's the news for now. And here's a few reminders. Next week, two great features. We'll be hearing from Michael Matz of Campaign for America's Wilderness with some important announcements. And the hydrogen car will zoom into your life as we visit with the hydrogen car company, a story you'll want to fasten your seatbelt for. Go ahead. Send me an email. I love to hear you. From you, actually. Well, we start today's quest at the San Diego Zoo, renowned for its amazing habitat displays of the world's miraculous creatures. But displays are only part of the zoo's features. There is lots going on behind the scenes in significant research in all aspects of animal ecology and survival. To take us into the realms of science, I want to welcome Dr. Frank J. Berkovitz, Director of the Behavioral Biology Division at the Center for Reproduction of Endangered Species at the San Diego Zoo. Dr. Berkovitz, it's a pleasure to have you on the Wild Side News.
Oh, good morning, Sydney. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, your work takes you all over the world, but today we're going to focus on just one of your projects. Let's talk about koala research at the zoo. Why are you researching koalas at the San Diego Zoo?
There's two key reasons for the koala research. The first has to do with colony management. What we're trying to do are understand the mechanisms of reproduction in order to maintain sustainable populations in captivity. And the second reason we conduct the research is because we can get some insights from watching the captive animals that can apply to conservation management programs overseas in order to help maintain sustainable populations of koalas in their natural habitat.
Well, tell us a little bit about the status of koalas in the world today.
Okay, the koalas in the year 2000 were deemed to be an endangered species by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. They have a pretty precarious existence in Australia, and the numbers are a little bit unclear. primarily because of the two of the things that you mentioned this morning, continuing threats to biodiversity with habitat destruction and deforestation. So the koalas in Australia live in pockets of eucalyptus trees, and it's difficult for them to have corridors to disperse from one area to another.
Something we talk about a lot, actually, on the Wild Side News, the corridor movement and the linkages. And apparently your efforts are to ultimately reintroduce koalas and establish habitats, and that's typically what happens in cases of endangered species. But there's some unique characteristics about the koala that make this a bit of a challenge. Why don't we talk about that a little bit? For example, one of the difficulties is the fact that they are some uniquely solitary individuals.
Right. Koalas in the wild live in their own little home ranges, small areas. They don't travel much, and they have an extremely restrictive, specialized diet, primarily of eucalyptus trees. And so one of the issues confronting koalas themselves concerns, how do I find another koala to mate with? In order for the koalas to succeed in the wild, they obviously have to find a mate.
Right.
And one of the questions that we are focusing in concerns, how do koalas find and pick mates?
Right, and actually that's a bit of a challenge because from what I understand, having talked with you earlier, basically in terms of mating, the male and the female find a means to come together, but then the guy takes off. And the mom is left to bear this child by herself. That creates kind of a unique problem, doesn't it?
Yes, what happens is the koalas, females, give birth to very, very tiny little creatures that are less than 3/4 inch long, called joeys. And those joeys come out of the female, they crawl their way up into the pouch, and they stay in the mom's pouch for about 7 months. And then they become independent when they're about a year old. Now, koalas are generally not thought of as animals that have a lot of maternal care, but these mothers are taking care of these little joeys and their infants for about a year, and the little tiny koala that begins as 3/4 inch and about 0.5 gram ends up gaining to be about 1/4 of the mother's size before it can actually wander around on its own. Now, the whole time the mother is with the infant, the father is someplace else.
And actually, that's part of the unique problem, the fact that the males don't typically get together with other males. As a matter of fact, they're extremely solitary. So what apparently happens is that once this child reaches the age to head out on his own, he has to head out into a forest and try to figure out where it's all right for him to be, because they also are territorial.
Exactly. And so what the koala has to do is find some place to live. And one of the probable mechanisms that koalas use to communicate with each other, since you had mentioned we're talking about talking,
yes,
is they talk to each other using a whole variety of vocal sounds. And so they call around to kind of get an idea of which koalas are where.
Why don't we, if everything goes well, I should be able to play this recording that you've made from the zoo. Let's see if we can hear what a male koala sounds like in the wild. Let's see what happens here. Well, that's quite a call, and I typically wouldn't associate that type of call with such a gentle and wonderful creature. How is the study of that call affecting your work?
We're trying to figure out whether the call itself is related to male hormone levels or male age or male size, or what exactly is the link between the specific attributes of the call and the male who's giving the call. And then we hope to figure out if we can identify those connections, then how does the call affect a female? Because in the wild, when the males give these bellowing calls, they tend to occur more often in the mating season. And the current thinking is that these calls are used primarily for two reasons. One is so that the males space themselves out. They avoid fighting if they hear another male calling. and the male, in effect, is saying, I am a huge big guy, so you stay away from me. On the other hand, if the female hears the same call, she might then become sexually aroused by the call, try to find the male to mate with him.
Well, it sounds like an incredible scientific challenge, and that is really what you're working on, is science here, to listen to calls and then monitor literally the response, hormonal response and other responses by females to see if you can determine what calls may work, because ultimately this may help you in terms of affecting populations into the future. We've got about a minute left. It goes so fast. Why don't you talk about how that might actually work?
Okay, the next step once we solve this would be to try to do playback calls. If we can figure out what part of the call is actually functioning as an arousal mechanism for the female, this is male telephone sex for the females,
yes,
then we can play those in the wild and we can try to establish, in effect, non-invasive methods to manipulate koala movement in the wild to promote their reproduction.
It's really a complex issue, and there's a lot to this. And you're also involved in other areas of research. Why don't you quickly tell us, and I'd love to go on about this, but we'll do this another time in more depth. Talk a little bit more about some of the other research that you're working on.
Okay, some of the other research involves hormones and behavior, social patterns among giraffe at the Wild Animal Park. Giraffe have complex societies. They aren't just living alone. We're involved in a field study of wild dogs in Zambia, and we are looking at growth and development of Vusmusi, who is a newborn African calf at San Diego Zoo's Wild Animal Park. And your listeners can actually watch Vusmusi if they log on to our website, www.sandiegozoo.org, where there is a camera that shows the elephant yard.
Dr. Berkovich, thanks for being here. Listeners, look at the website. You'll find a lot of interesting things on the Wild Side News.
Thank you.